HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today we're joined by Andrew Tang and Rebecca Yu. Rebecca and Andrew are founders of the UCD Smurfit Women Inspiring More. Guys, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you both doing?
Really well.
Very good, thank you. Thank you for having us as well.
No problem at all. Explain to people what SWIM is.
So we are a student and alumni-led initiative founded within the UCD Smurfit School of Business. So Rebecca and I are both students. Well, I'm a student, Rebecca's a former student of the MSc in Aviation Finance program, which essentially has historically been a very male-dominated discipline of study. So what we wanted to do, essentially combining some of our past experience in addition to, you know, sort of the demographics that we have within our course, bring forward and promote the interests of women in corporate positions, really. And we wanted to create a forum or network where university students can really learn and openly discuss these topics in preparation for the beginning of their careers.
I should mention that, you know, both myself and Andrew undertook career changes. So this is what Andrew's, you know, alluding to in our past experience. Andrew was working in investment banking, which is predominantly male dominated. Sure. And I actually was a high school chemistry and science teacher. And, you know, in science, they're very much male dominated. And, you know, there's a whole program when you're teaching to inspire girls to go into the STEM subjects. So me going into finance, I realized that actually I was on the other side of things and realized that I, you know, there wasn't much out for women and students. There was definitely a gap where there's lots of female networks when you're in the industry. So you've got women's networks in pretty much every industry to help promote. You've got Lean In, you've got Rise Up communities, but there seemed to be a gap for university level students to prepare them when they go into the workplace. Because I think for me, going into the corporate workplace from the public sector, there definitely were challenges that are not, you weren't prepared for or not really talked openly about. So it would be great if we had had that, or I had had that preparation beforehand. So I suppose that's where Smurfit Women Inspiring More really, you know, grew from. We wanted to have this forum for students to bridge the gap, or and those early in their career.
And it was based on your personal observations, was it, guys, in terms of going into, you know, going into new industries or going into other industries, that, you know, there was some clearly a gender misbalance, shall we say, or was it more to how different genders were treated?
I think it's a combination of both, really. And in answering that, I can sort of give you the background of what inspired this from my personal point of view. So for me, the elephant in the room every time we try to bring someone on board or try to get, you know, guest speakers to our events is, okay, what was a male doing sort of leading an initiative for women? So my answer to that is twofold. So first of all, the driving force behind my motivation is essentially my mother, who herself was a corporate woman and also had the task of raising my sister and I essentially by herself. And this was at a time where, you know, such issues are not brought to light as they are today. So it would have been a lot harder. And then the second aspect of that is, as Rebecca had mentioned, prior to coming to Dublin, I had a 15-year career in banking, and that was all spent in Japan. Now, don't get me wrong, Japan's a wonderful place to go, a wonderful place to live, but it's not exactly been the most, you know, progressive in diversity issues. Just an example, not only 2 months ago, you had the head of the Tokyo Olympic Organizing Committee having been forced to resign because of some, you know, sexist comments that he made. So while I was there, I was fortunate enough to be working for some very progressive companies. So I was involved in the women's networks internally and also externally within the financial community in Tokyo. And that, in addition to sort of the background of my mother, was really what brought me on to be more involved, you know, to try to spread the word, to do some more research, both from a personal perspective, also from my firm's perspective. And this is something that I really wanted to bring to Dublin, you know, to contribute to society here, not just as a student, but sort of as an informal educator as well.
So, yeah, really interesting, Andrew, and I wasn't going to allow it be the elephant in the room. I was going to ask you about that very point, so thank you for getting there. What's the objective of SWIM then? What will you guys do over the next year, or how do you best prepare those students for their working life? What sort of stuff are you going to be talking to them about?
So we had our launch in January, and we had a fireside chat with an alumna, Helen Doody, who is a leader in the financial industry. She's a managing director over out in New York. And that was really, you know, the launch pad. And she had some open conversations about her struggles and her challenges that she had in her career, which was about, you know, 15, 20 years ago when she first started in the industry. Both in London and over in the States. And I think a lot of what she was talking about was that the challenges she has, whilst we're getting, there have been improvements, we're still having the same challenges. There are still, you know, gaps in leadership. There still seems to be, you know, women leaving the workforce at key ages between the sort of the ages of 35 and 44, which is generally when you have, you know, young children or school aged children. I think there's still issues with gender pay gap. There's issues with female representation on boards. So what we have just tried to do is have webinars, bringing on guests with experiences or how they've tried to help change or challenge these issues that we have in the corporate world within companies. So our last webinar was on International Women's Day, and that was all about leadership through a crisis, throwing out the rule book, how having male allies, and those changes have to come from having male allies, and also by having someone in leadership making those changes. It really does have to come from the top. So what we decide is we want to have these webinars in which people are talking about the challenges that are still around today. So things like, you know, not just gender diversity on, you know, in leadership and on boards, but what we really want is to include diversity as a whole and diversity and inclusion. We're aware that, you know, our last few webinars have been very gender orientated. But as we move on and do more webinars, we want to tackle other topics, unconscious bias, those types of things. And it really just opens up and starts the conversation, I think, with university level students, so that, you know, when they are going to interviews or starting out their career, that they are looking for companies and realizing, you know, what values are important to them. Are these companies challenging, you know, diversity and inclusion issues? How you can really make sure that the company fits you as much as you fit the company. And I think by having these webinars, we want to to encourage men to be allies from from university level, to realize that there are these challenges. And so if we can bring male allies on board early on in the career, then hopefully as they move through their career, we have more parity, I suppose, in all aspects of corporate life.
I'm going to ask, go ahead, Andrew.
Okay, no, I was just going to expand on Rebecca's point there, in the sense that, okay, granted, both of us have come back to university as sort of, if you want to call it, mature age students. The majority of our audience have not had that experience working in the corporate environment. And sort of as we head into summer, a lot of these students will be going into internships for the first time or graduate jobs for the first time. So we're essentially trying to tackle the problem before it becomes a problem, you know, getting this awareness in their heads that, okay, diversity is a big thing, and these may not be necessarily discussed at an open level by the time they get to those jobs. So we're essentially just, you know, bringing the conversation forward and laying out their education, which it's not as if these kind of things or these kind of topics are covered in traditional university classes.
Yeah, no, good point. What's the level of, and when, you know, when you first introduce this topic to a third level student who, unlike the you guys who haven't maybe been in the workplace beforehand, is there a level of understanding that this is happening? Is how deep is that understanding, or is it a complete shock to a potential employee or and a current student that this out there?
I think it still is for the young students. I mean, one of our other co-founders has gone straight from undergraduate into the master's, and she has done an internship, and she was the only female on a team of 17, and that was in the financial services industry. And so I think she really realized at that point that there still is an issue with diversity and inclusion. And she was lucky enough to have an internship before, you know, she's done her master's, and she has had that experience. And I think, and she's come on board and she has been brilliant, because I suppose, like you said, myself and Andrew, when are a bit older, we're mature students, we're bringing in our experience, but she's also bringing in her experience from being that younger age, you know, doing internships in financial services, and there is still this issue.
Yeah, I think also, I'm not sure if it adds to the dampening the shock factor, but just with the advent of social media and the advent of, well, so many things happening in the past, you know, 5 or so years with women getting into corporate leadership positions, women in politics. You've seen obviously on the news around how well, for example, New Zealand, Germany have done with the COVID crisis and their female leadership. We've also seen a few examples here in Ireland, especially with regard to some of the guests who we brought onto our events of, you know, female leaders of big Irish corporations. So this kind of news is gradually, you know, making its way out there, like I said, through social media. So it is something that people are aware of. I think it's just sort of digging into the details that we are trying to help with.
Yeah, no, good point. There is a lot of fantastic women leaders, thankfully, in Ireland. Male allies, what can people do right now? What can males do right now to become better allies and to move this thing along and progress it?
I think if there was one overarching thing, it would just be keeping an open mind. So if we were to dig into possibly our last webinar, so as Rebecca mentioned, we had a gentleman who was the former CEO of a very large Irish consulting corporation. And his story really resonated because he realized from his position, essentially held his hands up and said, okay, we're not doing enough. He noticed a large population of women, you know, between 25 and 35 leaving the firm. And they realized that, okay, we're investing so much in hiring these people, training these people up, only to have them, you know, resign at the peak or heading towards the peak of their careers. It doesn't do well for business. So when it comes to male allies, it's really kind of fostering this pipeline of talent. And that's to the betterment of the firm, the organization, and I suppose the wider community even. And when I say keeping an open mind, that includes things when it comes to the corporate world, such as, you know, considering someone for an assignment, considering someone for a promotion. You know, you don't want to have this kind of unconscious bias that, okay, so-and-so may want to be starting a family soon, so it might not be the best idea to promote them. Essentially, we don't want to have that sort of, you know, at the forefront of people's minds. We want to maintain this sort of balance there, that everyone does have an equal opportunity. And it is really sort of a merit-based decision when it comes to, like I said, you know, promoting people or considering people for certain positions.
What you guys... go ahead, Rebecca.
Oh, no, sorry, Declan. I was just going to sort of add to what Andrew is saying in the sense of a lot of positions of leadership are still held by men. And I think this is where the idea of sponsorship comes into play, where, you know, females have advocates in these male leaders who are talking about them and advocating them for when they're not in the room. And I think by having a sponsor within a company can really help, you know, add to what Andrew was saying by considering promotions or assignments. If you've got someone speaking, you know, advocating for you in the room, then that helps you enormously. I think there's a lot of information about mentorship, which is brilliant, but I think really it's hand in hand. You need mentorship and sponsorship to be able to progress your career and get women into those leadership positions.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you, Rebecca. I think the advocacy thing in terms of just even removing the gender thing out of it, it's like if you have an advocate in the right rooms, it's probably the single best thing that can happen for your career in any individual company. So it's interesting you touch on that. Some companies... So unconscious bias, let me start that again. Unconscious bias, is, by its very definition, is we don't know we have it. We don't know we have this bias, or we certainly don't. It's not front of our mind when we have these biases. What can organizations do, in you guys' opinions, to eradicate that as best as they possibly can? And I'll give you an example. I've seen organizations before where they will have unconscious bias training and people will go to that. But the very people who don't choose to go to it are probably the ones who need to go to it the most. And then there's the other side of that coin, is where organizations make training mandatory. You know, people become training hostages and don't want to be there. I know there's no easy solution. Any thoughts on that?
I think you've said it, you know, unconscious bias training, companies hold it and those who need to do it don't tend to go, and then there's the mandatory side and people definitely don't want to do it. I know that there's been a lot of talk about whether unconscious bias training is good, does it do any good within companies, but I do think that unconscious bias training is not just a one-off. You can't just hold one session and then yep, ticked a box, I've done it, you know, the company's done it, you know, me personally, I've done it. You know, I do think it's an ongoing conversation that you have to have within the company. I think the training allows people to be aware of what's happening. I think we all have unconscious bias. There's no one who can say that they don't. But I think by having that training, you start to open that conversation, and you, by having that conversation, you're tackling the issue in itself, because you need to have the door open. So I'll give you an example. For me, I am of mixed heritage, and I often get asked all the time, where are you from? And I will say literally where I'm from. I'm from Southwest London, you know, and people go, no, where are you really from? And I'm like, yeah, I was born and bred in Southwest London. That's it. What they're asking for is, what's my heritage? You know, what's my background? What's my ethnicity? And for someone like me, when you get to know me, asking about my heritage, I love talking about my heritage. My father is from Hong Kong. My mother is British. I have had the privilege of being part of two cultures. I celebrate both cultures, you know, celebrations, and it's brilliant. But I think people are very scared to ask, you know, ask the questions or ask about your culture. You know, I've married into... My husband is Pacific Islander. He's from Tonga. So we're very much aware of mixed heritages and where people are from. I do think that by having people get so worried about asking the wrong thing. I think by having some sort of training, you open that conversation so people can come to you and say, look, I'm really interested to find out about X, Y, and Z. And I think once you start to have those conversations on a non-professional level, I think it also can then help trickle into when you do have a professional conversation, or you then start to look at your own recruitment process in companies and being like, okay, is our recruitment process geared towards men? Is it diverse? Are we interviewing enough women? What ethnicities, you know, if people want to tell us the ethnicities, are we looking at a diverse range of candidates? That's what I think needs to be done. Andrew?
Yeah, 100% think? Agree. Like, especially around the point of it just being sort of a relentless pursuit. Again, just to allude to one of our previous guests, he described this pursuit as you can't just have balloons in the reception and say, okay, we've done it, tick the box, nice big celebration, done, sweep it under the cover. It just needs to be something that's continuously brought on, like, you know, various versions of unconscious bias training. You know, sort of the topic even coming up at regular one-on-ones, performance reviews. So yeah, exactly to Rebecca's point, it's just something that needs to be, you know, ingrained into people's mentalities.
Balloons in reception, Andrew, I might use that one going forward as the benchmark of what not to do. No, but I take your point. I know what you mean. Anything that's a one-time event or day or week is just, it doesn't lead to long-term sustainable change. So I do agree with you. There's a million different things I want to ask you guys, because I find this a fascinating subject, and it's undoubtedly a problem. I'm going to go to one place, because I know we do have time constraints to morning. Gender pay gap, they're reporting it in the UK, they're not in Ireland. My understanding is, while it is something that takes a while to move for some obvious reasons, it has started to move in the right direction in the UK. Is it a no-brainer for Ireland to do that, or do you think it will happen?
To be fair, I don't think either of us are experts in the field of gender pay gap. There's definitely room for the needle to move in Ireland, but what I can say just from, you know, past work I've done and research is that by moving the gender pay gap needle, you obviously do encourage more participation of females in the workforce. Now, in one of the previous firms which I worked for in Japan, an extensive study was actually done that if you were to increase the participation of females in the workforce, either through policies such as, you know, encouraging part-time work for women who have recently started families, or just encouraging women to come back to work, or having, you know, better family leave, parental leave policies, paternity leave policies, what that can do is actually boost the GDP of a country by a significant percentage. And I think the estimation from that research was somewhere in the space of 10 to 15%, which, you know, for a country like Japan is absolutely huge. So, like I said, I can't talk to the actual numbers behind the gender pay gap itself, but this act of, you know, getting more females into the workforce, and when you combine that with, you know, that addition of talent, or not losing that talent, if you like, I think that can do that does loads for a country's economy.
What else is on your guys' radars this year? How any other sort of key things that you want to prepare people who are bridging that gap from education into the workplace? Is there any other major topics you're getting ready to brief them on?
Yeah, so I can just quickly use this opportunity to introduce our next webinar, which is actually next week on the 14th of April. I'll quickly talk about our guests. So one is Paula Fiennes. So she is an alumna of UCD. She's had an almost 20-year career in pharma. And after 10 years, essentially as a full-time mother, she took a career break to try to essentially restore balance to family life. Our other guest is Dr. Marie Murray. So she's also a UCD alum, has worked as a clinical psychologist for over 40 years. She's a chartered psychologist and family therapist. So together they've written a book called The Invisible Job. Now, I'll hold my hands up here and say I'm not probably as advanced through the book as Rebecca is. So do you want to quickly just go through what the book is about and what we're talking about in this webinar?
Yeah, so it's a brilliant book. It really is addressing what the invisible job is. So the first part of the book is all about the unpaid work that goes on in the family, which has typically landed on the female, whether they're working or not. And it's about having those conversations with your partner. You know, maybe before you have children, is to how best divide up the work at home. It's not, Paul is really clear, it's not a parental book. It's nothing like that. I don't have children, and I can see the benefits of reading, you know, this book and having those open conversations with my husband about, you know, we're both working, so how do we split up the work at home, which is really good. And then the rest of the book is really about the statistics and the differences between Ireland and the UK, as well as Europe and globally, like the US. It's really interesting because there are parts of it in which there are differences between the UK and Ireland, even though culturally we're very, very similar. Actually, when it comes to the invisible job, I think there are probably some differences between what happens in Ireland and what happens in the UK. Whilst the data is not able to really dive in deep, I do think that, you know, people reading this book will be like, oh, okay, this is really interesting. I think another interesting point and why it's so important, you know, why we want to have these conversations now, is I think COVID has really hit women the hardest. The World Economic Forum now estimates 135.6 years to reach gender parity, which is an increase of 35.6 years pre-COVID. Women have been hit so hard with COVID, not only through the loss of jobs, because a lot of the jobs losses have come through retail, which was one of the biggest industries to employ females, but also the unpaid work or the invisible job at home. They've taken on the more responsibilities of the homeschooling and things like that. And so I think the World Economic Forum has spoken about the double shift of from paid to unpaid work. And so Paula's book has really, I think, resonates with what is happening now and what happens all the time, you know, pre-COVID, that there is this invisible job. And it's not a, you know, a corporate issue, it's a society issue. And that actually we want to help both, or she wants to sort of bring to light the issues for both men and for women in terms of the invisible job. Women are going into the workplace more, but also to allow men to be able to take, you know, the opportunities for parental leave. I think there still is in some countries and in some parts of the world in which it's difficult for a man to take parental leave because of the way the company will treat, you know, them as well. So I think it's really bringing to light society, the invisible job that happens at home. And we're also going to be talking about the psychological implications of having these separate gendered roles. You know, we still got these separate gendered roles, and that's where Dr. Marie Murray is going to come in using her expertise.
Really interesting. We're going to link all of the details for the webinar under the podcast, so people can access that. And it's open for anyone to join, Rebecca, isn't that correct?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Super. Okay. So yeah, we'll provide all the links for that. Guys, really, really want to thank you for joining me today. It's a really interesting area. I think what you're doing is very important. I think it's a very good initiative you have been involved in setting up. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Declan, and thank you for having us on as well.
Thank you, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.